Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, October 21st. I'm Ray Graff. Our favorite bird experts are back. Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart join us to share their birding knowledge with you and answer your questions if you have any. The question line is 800-348-2551. The answer line is unknown. You can call us at 800-348-2551 if you want to talk about birds. You can also email voxpop@wamc.org with your sightings, etc. voxpop@wamc.org, or if you have a burning birding question, it's 800-348-2551. Julie Hart is here. Her headphones are on. Rich Guthrie is here. He just put his headphones on. He's talking about something. I don't know what he's... I'm going to find out during the news, and then we'll do a show, and we'll talk to you then. All right, let's do this. It's Birds Today with Julie Hart and Rich Guthrie. Man, this is going to be fun. Do you like birds? I was almost attacked by a bird of prey, and it frankly frightened me, and it frightened my cat, and I'm disturbed. Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart are here, and Rich is retired from the New York State DEC. He gallivants around the country. Lord knows we're lucky that he's even in Albany today. Julie Hart is project coordinator for the New York Breeding Bird Atlas. She coordinates with thousands of volunteers to document bird breeding behaviors. They're collating the data. They've done a lot of work over the last couple of years. The number to call with your birding question is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Always great to have these two on the show. Julie Hart, how are you?
I'm okay.
Are you?
Yeah. Well, I mean, at least it's sunny and nice weather.
It's so beautiful. It's great. Rich Guthrie, great to have you back in the States.
Great to be back.
And when are you leaving?
Pretty soon.
Yeah, I know. You know what? You travel a lot in your retirement. It's pretty good. So I'm sitting out on the back porch, taking the air. Beautiful day. Maybe last week. I don't remember. It was a nice day. And Mitchell, the cat, is next to me sitting there. And
outside?
Yes, outside. And I'm not having this argument with you. Yes. And so all of a sudden, this bird comes in. And it didn't look like a huge bird of prey, but it was clearly a bird of prey. And it came swooping in. And at first I thought, oh, God, it's going right for me. And then it took a pass over Mitchell, the cat, and then flew up and sat in the tree for a little bit. It was not a big bird of prey, and it looked to me like it had some white, almost checkerboard on it. Is that possible? Does that ring a bell?
Yeah.
Rings a bell.
What is it?
Well, I'm going to suggest it is one of the two excipiters that frequent backyards in our area.
What's an excipiter mean?
It's a very fast-moving woodland-type hawk with short, rounded wings and a long tail. So it can fit between the branches, and that long tail gives it a rudder that can make sharp right turns at any speed.
Yeah, he went, dive-bombed us, and then just went up to the bough of the evergreen,
and
which was nearby,
and
hung out.
They sit there and pretend that nobody can see them, and they're waiting for something to make a move, and bingo, they're in.
So what was that? I mean, what kind of bird?
Either a Cooper's hawk or a sharp-shin hawk.
Yeah.
I looked up sharp-shin, and I don't think it was that. So maybe Cooper's hawk.
Cooper's, they're almost identical except for size. And
is Cooper's hawk smaller?
No, bigger.
Interesting.
Larger. And it's not. It's way smaller than a red-tailed hawk.
Okay, this was not huge. I mean, at first I thought, oh, this is an owl, but I don't think so.
Well, the sharp-shin hawk can be as small as a blue jay, and the Cooper's hawk can be as large as a crow or a raven.
Yeah.
So the difference between the two is mainly size, and the young ones can have that kind of checkerboard because they have a pattern of black speckles on them.
Now, remember, maybe my impression that it was checkerboard could be wrong.
Things allowing happen for that.
I mean, if I was on the grassy knoll in 1963, I would not have been a good witness.
Right.
I mean, things happen very quickly, you know?
And allowing for that. I think they're pretty brazen because, number one, they're very alert and fast. And what they want is usually in somebody's backyard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I thought Mitchell might have been the...
No, not likely.
Well, Mitchell was about the same size, so...
Yeah, but they're more interested in smaller birds. Mitchell, a starling or a mourning dove or sparrows or their fare.
Mitchell is so old now that Mitchell barely even registered. You know, the thing went rough. You were in trouble there, Kat, but everything was fine.
Got your attention.
Yes, exactly. The number here is 800-348-2551. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. Had a conversation with one of our commentators, Janice Horowitz, who is kind of a big deal in the day, doing health related stuff for networks and whatnot. And she does commentary here. She's great. So we're chatting, and she lives in New York City most of the time. And she brought up just before I left to go into the studio for the show something about Falco. Who's Falco? What's the Falco?
Well, Falco is an owl. It was an owl that lived in Central Park in New York City after having busted out of an aviary someplace in a zoo and lived in the wild in the Central Park in New York City for many, many months. And he became really quite the attraction. He had many fans following Falco. First of all, Falco is a huge bird. I think it's the second largest mm-hmm. owl in the world.
And what kind of owl was this?
It looks like a great horned owl, but it has glowing yellow eyes, gleaming gold color eyes.
Okay.
And it looks straight at you.
The Eurasian version of the great horns.
So like a Mothman kind of thing, just glowing eyes.
Yes, piercing right through you, sees right through you, and reads your thoughts and minds and soul.
Really?
Mm.
Okay.
So Falco, unfortunately, met its demise by making a wrong turn into the side of a building in New York City.
Wow. Okay, so Falco's dead. I don't know why she brought up a sad story like that right before I went on.
But the bottom line is, probably the theory is that Falco, who was quite adept at moving around, managing to live in the city, was somehow injured or senses were muted because of pesticide intake. The rodenticides that are used in the city to kill rats.
There were so many rats in New York City that there must be tons of what is it, cyanide, Julie? They use what do they use on these?
I don't know the chemical, but
it's an anticoagulant, very similar to I forget the name of that medicine that you take for
warfarin.
Warfarin, yes. Yes, warfarin.
Well, now you'll get sued. Just from our legal department standpoint, I didn't say anything about this, okay?
Warfarin is a known rodenticide, and what it does is it has an effect on the bloodstream in these small mammals. There are alternatives out there that does not have impacts on target species like hawks and owls and cats and kids and foxes and the like. So...
I mean, this is a problem, though. Rodenticide is a problem anywhere there's a city, right? Or probably even in the country.
Anywhere.
Countrywide. Yeah. It became very, very popular. It was found in farmyards, and it found in industrial facilities, in places where it would be hardly likely to find these rodents. But they're out there. They're these little black boxes that they put on the base of buildings, and... the little rodents get in there, they have a nibble on this stuff, and they go wandering out, wobbling around, and they become easy targets for a predator.
You know, the thing is, Julie, it seems to me that we've been down this road before with the Eagles and
DDT. And Eldrin and Dieldrin.
And it gets into the food chain, and there's endless trouble. Why, then, is this rat, is there no alternative?
There are plenty of alternatives, but I think it's just so easy, and it's, you know, it's readily available, it's affordable, it's just convenient, really.
And like I say, there are products out there that are that don't threaten non-target species, and they're safe to use it even around the house.
That's okay. Well, I'm glad she brought up that sad story. Thanks, Janice. The number here is 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. Let's grab an email or two, and then we'll take a break, and we'll do phones and emails together as one. Peter in Saratoga writes, woodpeckers on wood siding. The corners of my house are under attack by woodpeckers. They're far more aggressive than they've ever been. One spot's about 2 inches wide and 2 inches deep. That's a deep hole. I know that this is a never-ending battle and a cost for living in a slightly more rural spot, but any suggestions I can try are appreciated. Our siding is a rough-cut pine. It's nice and dry. It's about 40 years old. Julie, what do you think?
There are some treatments you can put. Is it like boron or something.
Borax?
Borax, maybe. I don't know. There's
Boron's an inert gas, isn't it?
I know it is. Yeah, you're right. I don't know. Something sounds like that.
Yeah. A noble gas.
You can put on on the wood. You can treat it, and that will help deter the insects that the birds are going after.
But it's really, Rich, we've talked about this so many times. This is really indicative of the fact that there could be some critters inside that wood.
Yeah, it's all about food for the most part, except in the spring when there's courtship going on, but this doesn't sound like that behavior. The size of the holes and the locations makes me think that there's carpenter bees or carpenter ants.
Started
and
the
termites
hole. Oh, interesting.
That are inside the wood, and woodpeckers know how to find lunch, and that's what they're shopping for.
Yeah, okay. Now, is there a little bird that very much resembles a woodpecker? I swear we've been seeing. There are so many birds in my backyard, and so many of them annoy me. They're just so loud and obnoxious little things that are in the bushes right next to my patio. But there's a new kind that I haven't seen in a while, and it looks sort of like a woodpecker.
Is it like a nuthatch? Do you know nuthatches?
Do I look like I know nuthatches?
Well, you know, you've been doing the show a long time.
I should know.
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, there are small woodpeckers, like the downy woodpecker is pretty small, but then nuthatches and even the chickadees and titmice will.
Yes.
It's a nuthatch.
Is that what you're holding up?
Nuthatch.
Nuthatch.
Yeah.
You know, Rich used to bring huge books. Now he does it on the phone, which is cheating, really.
These are small birds that also like to eat a lot of the seeds, and then they like hammer them on branches in order to get into the seed.
Ah.
Or they'll be like pushing them into a crevice to like store them, stash them away for the winter.
Yeah. Are they here all year long?
Yes. These are here all year
long. All right, let's take a quick break here. We'll do some more emails and calls and whatnot. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Oh, my gosh. Do I hear Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass? Take it away, whipped cream. Johnny Olson, tell them what they've won. No, it's Vox Pop. It's Birds Today with Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart. Let's see, another email or two, and then we'll go to the phones. Anonymous in Saratoga says, good reference for justifying keeping hummingbird feeders up. My siblings advised the family to remove hummingbird feeders by October because hummers then won't migrate and they'll starve. My sister had a friend in Georgia, I think, who had two dead hummingbirds when it was too late. Maybe we both could be right about this. Some hummers may die during migration. My opinion is we can help more make it. Do you have a good reference to back up keeping feeders up? And that's from Anonymous in Saratoga. Julie, you start, then Rich, you go.
Yeah, so the hummingbirds are not likely to stick around just because there's feeders. They get this this feeling, it's called Zugenruhe. It's a German word but it's like when the birds start getting really antsy because they like, I gotta migrate now. They're gonna migrate no matter what, whether there's a feeder or not. So keeping those feeders up is not going to delay their migration. What it will do is provide much needed food for some bird that is late.
Okay, so it's not, in your estimation, not a huge deal leaving it up.
No, just I think the only thing to make sure is that you keep it clean still.
Okay.
You don't want it to get moldy, and then you can have bacteria growing in there, and that could be a problem.
Wouldn't know the word is Zugenflugen. What was that word again?
Zugenruhe.
Zugenruhe. Okay. Let's.
All right. Good job.
All right, Rich. You want to add anything to that?
No, that's good. I leave mine up, and we've had hummingbirds come through right in through November and December.
Mm-hmm.
These are the rare ones that come from the far west or far northwest, Alaska, British Columbia, and the like.
Mm.
So they get a little off track, but they do survive. Banding has demonstrated that these hummingbirds that have been recaptured have been banded before and returned in subsequent years.
All right, another call, another email from Saratoga, then we'll hit the phones. 800-348-2551. This one's from Tom in Saratoga. Where are my cardinals? We live in Greenfield Center. Okay, Greenfield Center. For 10 years, we've had breeding pairs of cardinals taking up residence in our Cynthia bush. They have been there through all four seasons. We saw them this spring as usual, but they've been missing throughout the summer, now into the fall. We've had no cardinals in our yard for some time. We also have a piece of property in Saratoga. There have been cardinals hanging out there forever as well. They're also missing. Is there a cardinal problem? And that's from Tom.
Not that I'm aware of. There's no problem. They change their behavior a bit throughout the year, depending on when they're breeding or not, whether they're coming into feeders or, you know, getting natural food sources. So it could just be that. Some of the birds do move as well. They'll like move around and move further south. But I don't know of any population issues.
Neither do I. But cardinals, like many birds, will congregate during the winter. They're very territorial during the breeding season, but in the winter they're somewhat gregarious. And he might have just found another bunch to hang out on a different corner.
I love cardinals. We love having them. We have some that just stick around in our yard all the time.
Yeah, mine
just
are missing too.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, since I've come back, they have. They used to come up onto my porch and actually roost for the night.
Okay, here's the thing. You've neglected them very much. Very much.
Right.
Exactly.
They're pouting. They're having a little tantrum.
By the way, before we hit the phones, Des in Cornwall says, sorry, I'm picky. Love the show. Never miss it, but I have a tiny correction to make. The owl's name was Flacco, not Falco. It means skinny in Spanish because he didn't get much to eat when he first escaped into the wilds of Central Park.
There you go. Thank you.
No, Falco was on what? She was on The Sopranos, right?
It's also the scientific name for the falcons.
Falco is or Flacco is?
No, Falco.
Falco.
But however, you are right. And thank you for bringing that up.
Thanks,
Des. I knew there was some twist to that, and I wasn't picking up on it.
Okay. Well, shall we go to the phones, or shall we talk about Flacco for a while longer? Let's go to Paul in Windsor. Paul, you're on.
Falco is or Flacco?
Hey, Paul, turn the radio down, daddy-o. Oh, for Pete's sake. Okay, he's gone. Okay, so, and call back, Paul. We'll put you on. Here's the deal. You got to turn the radio down, all right? It's easy. Just when you're on, turn. Now, I'm going to go to Wendy and Shokan now. So, Wendy, get ready to turn your radio down now. Go ahead, Wendy.
All right. My radio's down.
Beauty.
Hi. I have a question. We were just up in Canada, and we spent a lot of time along the shoreline almost daily. And there was a group of eagles that were together all the time, two mature eagles, several that looked like they were maybe first year. And then I'm not exactly sure about eagles, but I think that there's the second year where they're sort of turning. Their feathers are getting more white. Anyway, they were all varied ages, but they were together every single day hanging on the shoreline. And I wondered if that was unusual behavior for eagles. I had never seen that many, usually seven, maybe sometimes nine.
Huh. That's a lot.
That is a lot.
It's a lot. It was a lot. But we were in Cape Breton, Nova Scotia. So there's a lot of eagles there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's eagles for you. They gather. And especially, like I mentioned earlier, with the cardinals, eagles do that too. And there are some pictures of multiple eagles in a single tree. We have that in our area quite often. They find a favorable roosting spot and they congregate, gather, talk about a little gossip here and there, and they occasionally go out and get lunch. But that's what they do during the off season. And the young ones will do it any time of the year. I've seen as many as 40 young eagles in a stretch of the Hudson River all together.
Wow. Okay. So it's not unusual, and they're not necessarily a family group. They're just congregating because of food or sociability or?
Mostly food. That's when we often see them around here in the winters when the lakes start to freeze over and you've got the eagles will hang out on the edge of the ice. Yeah. And you'll see like tons of eagles together, particularly like Ashikan Reservoir. We get tons and tons of eagles there because they're all there to get easy access to the fish.
All right, Wendy, thank you very much for the call. The number here is 800-348-2551. Robert is in Stone Ridge. All right, Robert, we're coming to you next. Turn that radio down. Robert, you're on.
Hi, my radio is off.
Thanks.
So my question is, I had a squirrel running around a tree like crazy the other day, and then I noticed there was a small hawk that was chasing it around that tree. Would a Cooper's hawk do that? Because this wasn't any broadwing hawk or anything. It's a small hawk. Would it go after a squirrel?
Sure. Sure. Especially if the squirrel isn't up to his game, the Cooper's hawk will pick up on that. And, lunch and dinner is fair game.
Yeah, okay. I thought because of Ray's cat wasn't in trouble, maybe something even as big as a squirrel wouldn't be that in trouble.
Well, it could have been a different hawk. I mean,
okay.
Yeah.
No, Cooper's hawk.
I mean, it looked like a pretty small one.
Julie?
Okay, I was just going to say that, so there's quite a bit of size variation within a species, too. The females are a lot bigger than the males. You see, some of the large females can go for the larger prey.
Okay. Well, yeah. Robert, thanks a lot. There are these new squirrels in our backyard this year, and maybe they're not new around here, but these little red squirrels, these are the most annoying, loud, obnoxious.
They're cute as all get
up. No, they're not.
They are.
They're satanic.
They're adorable.
Look at you. I had one jump off my shoulder the other day. I'm sitting on my porch, and it was after the peanuts, and it used my shoulder as a launch pad.
All right, Dr. Doolittle, let's go to the next call. 800-348-2551. Jay is in Covington, Mass. Jay, you're on.
Yes, a Cooper's hawk story. I was driving up a road and a Luna moth flew in front of my car. And as I drove past, I looked into the rearview mirror and a Cooper's hawk came out of the woods, grabbed the Luna moth, and continued on.
Wow.
Yeah.
A moth.
Yeah.
But they're that omnivorous. It was striking.
And, I'm sorry to hear about the Luna moth because they're one of my favorites out there. But like I say, squirrels and moths are all in the game.
Yeah, Jay, thanks a lot. I mean, Luna moth, that's pretty big.
That's a big
meal.
I mean, most of it's wings, but they have it's probably a nice little morsel, the body.
Hearty little lunch.
Yeah, a little like candy bar snack. Yeah.
It's more in the fare of the screech owl type of thing. The Luna moth, that's more in their alley.
All right, let's go. Oh boy, let's go to do a couple of emails here, and then we'll go to our buddy Merlin Argyle, and that's
looking
radio
forward,
excitement.
Yes.
All right, Merle, get ready. A couple of calisthenics. We'll get to you in a moment. John Fisher said, "Is it possible Ray saw a red shoulder hawk?" I don't think so. I think those are too big.
Yeah.
This was not huge. I mean,
anything's possible with Ray, but
how dare you?
So it could have been a red shoulder, but not likely. I've still put my chips on the Coopers or Schultz.
Okay.
Yeah,
Tracy
I
says,
agree.
Could it have been a Merlin? They're small, super fast, and fearless.
Not likely. Okay. The description sounded Merlin is a possibility. They're a member of the Falcon group, and they are fast, but they are also, I think, a little too shy to come up and be that brazen.
Yeah.
All right. And then this one is from Vincent. I had the same problem. Remember our call about the woodpecker holes that were pretty big? Vincent writes in, I had the same problem with the woodpecker holes. I got some owl decoys and placed them strategically around the house and no more woodpecker damage. Julie, I don't know.
I mean, that should work for a little bit, but my guess is the woodpeckers are going to be smart enough and they're going to realize those owls never move. And they're going to start doing it again.
Right.
Probably.
Now, what if you had owl decoys that moved?
I have. And
people,
I think that's a brilliant idea, right? Latch on to that.
Well,
if you had something,
obviously it's been done. So.
I think that's been done. Now.
Yeah.
I mean,
even something that passively moves, like putting a lightweight paper to simulate moving wings or something like that. The stationary feature is something that the birds get accustomed to, and they get over that in about 10 minutes. They'll perch on it. They'll use it as a handy hat.
Yeah, they can get used to the moving things, too. Like a lot of people do, like, old CDs because they're shiny and reflective, and you hang them from string, and then they're moving around, like, all the time.
But I have something new here. You might have seen me tapping away on my phone.
Yes.
My nephew, who's a forester out in the Western Mountains, has a feature that he put up on the volunteer fire company building where the woodpeckers were drilling holes.
Right.
And this is, He says it worked like a charm. The woodpeckers have no longer come back and are not using it. Now, it has a brand name, but I will say that it is, the description is it's an ultrasonic bird control for outdoors.
I see.
And he says, now, I like the idea because this guy is very observant. He's a biologist in training and by trade. And so I would recommend doing a search
for... So what does it look like?
It's a box, a little box, and it's not very expensive. It's less than $50.
Noise.
Pardon?
That makes ultrasonic noise.
Apparently, yes.
Interesting.
Yes.
Now, you know,
well,
go ahead, Julie.
Can I just say, though, like the plant over in Cajos... That has the
screeches,
the screeching,
predator calls,
right? And that doesn't really work anymore.
Doesn't.
So I'm wondering if that also the birds will get used to this too.
I don't know. I do.
I thought birds didn't hear that well.
Oh no, they hear
excellent.
Hear
great.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
They hear
how do they smell?
Smell is
variable.
See, I set you up for a joke. How do they smell?
Yeah.
Terrible. That's the old,
gotcha.
Old joke right there. You know what?
Sorry.
Speaking of adventures in radio, let's go to Merle in Argyle. Merle, you're on. Or not. Hello, Merle.
Merle.
Dude, what's up?
Merle.
You know what?
We miss you.
We get so excited that Merle is on, and then there's maybe he got excited.
I want to rebate.
Did you pass out, Merle? Hello, Merle. Merle. All right, Merle's going to, he's coming again. Paul left us early. Paul in Windsor, you're on now. Hello.
Hi. Sorry about that earlier.
You got
I'm an old timer, and I don't remember seeing vultures when I was a kid. Now I see vultures everywhere.
Yes.
So the population has increased. My question is, the food has to have increased for that. Does that mean the environment is dying off and there's all sorts of carrion for them?
Okay, that's a great point.
Or is it the opposite?
What do they eat,
Julie?
Or is
it the opposite? The environment is really booming, so there's more carrion there just because there's more animals out there.
So, yeah, they do eat carrion. Yes.
Exclusively.
True. Turkey vultures exclusively, yes.
Okay.
Black vultures, which we have now as well,
yeah.
Will eat some other foods as well that they can kill.
Right.
It's not as frequent, but it does happen.
Mm-hmm.
And black vultures never used to be here in New York at all. And they have moved further north. And they're actually quite far north, even up into Champlain Valley
uh-huh.
now. And they're kind of like taking over, it seems like.
I do like them.
And they stay around all winter, some of them. Because they can still find food. So
yeah.
I think some of it is, you know, the changing climate. It's not quite as extreme in the winter, so the black vultures can stay. Turkey vultures still leave. Just that's what they're used to doing. That's what they still do. But some of the black vultures will hang out. So we see more vultures now than we used to.
So, Paul, maybe what you're seeing is an influx of black vultures too. And then, Rich, when do the turkey vultures head out?
They usually, right now, as a matter of fact, this is mm-hmm. Kind of the peak migration period for them, and soon will be the migration period for the golden eagles. Red-tailed hawks are moving out now. Golden eagles are just starting to, and they'll be coming down. And there's a couple of places where I highly recommend if you want to see golden eagles. And one of them is down in Oneonta, New York, at Franklin Mountain Observatory.
Really?
Oneonta? In our listening area, the Delaware Otsego Audubon Society conducts daily watches and counts of raptors mm-hmm. going over Franklin Mountain.
Wow. Okay.
So I Paul, I'm with you on that earlier observations. I remember as a kid reading in Wildlife of North America by Henry Hill Collins, who said that you could tell when you were crossing the Mason-Dixon line by looking up and seeing turkey vultures overhead. And now you could be crossing the Canadian border and see turkey vultures overhead. So it's in that short period of time, because I'm not that old, but that turkey vultures have come from 0 to 60 in that fast.
Amazing. All right, let's take a break here. Rich Guthrie is here. Julie Hart is here. It's Vox Pop. It's Birds. 800-348-2551. Little Duke Ellington. Here you go. Thank you. So this is something of a make-good show on Vox Pop. The Bird Show, we had to bump because of the fund drive at the beginning of the month. And you know what? We're going to make good now. And then in 2 weeks, we're doing it again. So if you don't get through today, you can get through in 2 weeks. And then we'll be back on our normal schedule with Julie Hart and Rich Guthrie. 800-348-2551 is the number. A couple emails here. I see Merle is back on the line. I'm going to make him wait now because he wasn't there. So here we go. This email from Adelia. I'm driving, so I won't say much, but when I was on 295 going between Chatham and New Lebanon earlier today, I was shocked to see an eagle feeding along with a couple other, probably crows, by the side of the road. As I approached it, I assumed it was a vulture, but then quite clearly, head and golden beak and white tail. They showed. How common are eagles in our area now? And that is from Adelia. Or Adelia.
Yeah, that sounds like there's probably something animal had gotten hit along the side of the road, and the crows and the eagles were eating that.
Will they do that at the same time?
Yep. Yeah.
Oh, it's crows kind of comical to watch the crows trying to sneak a meal away from an eagle.
Crows are brave. Yeah. I mean, the eagles will kind of just push their way through, and they have, like, first dibs, but... the crows try to sneak in.
I told you that story a year or two ago. I think it was early spring, still cold, where we saw the bald eagle on the tree. I mean, we never really see them in our neighborhood, chowing, dining enjoyably on a rabbit or whatever it was, squirrel, I couldn't tell. The crows were going mental. Mm. And the eagle's like, will you mind? I'm eating here. Stop. Just cut it out. This is from Matt in Rexford. Are northern harriers rare in this area? I saw one in Niskayuna near the bike path on the Mohawk River across from the old train station several years ago. Are they rare?
Somewhat. They used to be more common. They used to nest in our area, but habitat has changed. And now we have them primarily as migratory raptors or overwinter visitors. And they on our Christmas bird counts, we end up with about a dozen or maybe a dozen or 20 or so, the combination of bird counts in the Capital District at least. But they are out there, and it's a good observation. They're a beautiful bird to watch.
And they're migrating right now, too.
Okay, so there'd be a chance. Mm-hmm. By the way, we spoke about the stuff you can put on, and we weren't sure it was borate.
Yeah.
Sam writes in, borate is what you spray on wood to keep powder post beetles out, et cetera, et cetera. So there you go. Let's go back to the phones. Merle has been very kind in calling back. Now, you better be ready there in Argyle. 800-348-2551. It's Merle's turn. Merle, you're on. He's not there again.
He's putting us on, Ray.
Merle, you're killing me, man. You're killing me.
His sound is not working.
Yeah. Are you on mute, young man? Are you on mute?
I hear something.
Am I here?
Yeah.
There you are.
Heavens to Murgatroyd. You're killing me, man. Yes, you're here. Go ahead.
Okay, I'm on. I would put my hearing aids in.
Oh,
I
said, splendid.
Maybe I'll try that.
Okay. Go ahead.
All right. This is a follow-up. No, this is homework for both of you.
Okay.
Rich is going on vacation. He can do this online.
Okay, fair
and
enough.
Julie, you can do this as homework.
Okay.
I asked you the question last time about birds eating earlier, and you both poo-pooed it. But I think since I did hear it on fake news NPR,
hey now.
I believe it, and I think it's climate change.
Okay.
I think it's getting hotter. The birds are eating early. Please do some homework.
So, Merle,
we did talk about this last time, though, after the show.
Yes.
And sorry, it's like right there on the tip of my tongue, basically, and I'm kind of spacing. But we had talked about some of the papers that came out during COVID, I believe. It was something with that that explained. It wasn't like a general pattern, but it was like an example of what Merle had brought up.
While they're thinking, let me just say one thing. You were on the line. You waited a few minutes. Hang on. You waited a few minutes, and then I tried you, and then you were gone. Then you called back, and then you waited again just so you could yell at Rich and Julie. How does that make you feel? How does that make you feel, man?
He's determined.
I feel terrible. I'm putting in my earphones.
Oh, boy. All right, so what do you guys think? All right, hang on.
The question is Eagles.
Eagles.
This had to do with two eagles in a field eating the same prey. So that's not unusual.
No, it's not.
Okay. All right. I thought it was. I've been to Prince Rupert, and when they're eating fish, they're all separate. But this was very odd seeing two white-headed male full-grown eagles eating the same prey.
Wow. So they were like a Golden Corral, that sort of thing. They were,
yeah,
interesting. Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Gosh. Yeah.
Merle.
You guys can have the rest of the day off.
You're killing me, man. I tell you what, can you guys do your homework for the next one and discuss this early feeding? Because Merle's going to be very upset.
I know. He's going to call us out again.
Yes, I'm going to be very upset.
Goodbye. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's Birds. Rich Guthrie, Julie Hart, Merle from Argyle. John is in Albany. John, you're on. Oh, for Pete's sake, this is one of those days. You know what? It started yesterday during Medical Monday. Things went off the rails very quickly. John, are you there or are you? I don't know what you're doing, frankly. You at a Chuck E. Cheese right now, sir. All right. Let's go to Richard and Rensselaer. Richard, you're on.
Yes, hi. I had a bird pecking, woodpecker pecking my house, and I went to see where it was, and that scared him off. But it was at a fairly accessible spot, so I later went and looked, and I saw below where he'd been pecking, there was a hole like a carpenter bee would make. And I went and poked it, because I don't appreciate the bee living there, and it went up to where the woodpecker was pecking. So my question for you is, how did the woodpecker know that there was a carpenter bee made a home in my trim?
They hear it. They hear it moving around in the wood.
Really?
Inside.
They could hear the carpenter bee inside.
Yeah, they do the same with ants and other beetles. Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing.
When they're just flying by, or do they go inspecting like every square inch of my house?
I think they probably recognize the hole as a landmark and investigate and check that out. And then, you know, on a further investigation, they determine that there's something moving around
that's
in there, like
amazing.
Julie said. And then it's
so it's not that big a hole, but they still recognized it flying by.
I think that would be one of the techniques. And I heard an interesting speculation from a friend of mine who suggested that with their incredible eyesight, which birds indeed do have, it might be able to see the difference in air density of the carbon dioxide coming out of the hole from the respiration.
Come on, really?
Yeah, that's a whole big stretch. I know. That's a real stretch. But it's an interesting prospect because perhaps there's something to that.
Well, you should be able to scientifically prove or disprove that, right?
I know. But this is pure speculation. It's just like, how do they really hear these things from a distance? As you say, Richard, that they zoom in on it, so it's a good question.
I mean, when you go out for a walk, you can hear some of these other, like, wood-boring beetles making noise inside the trees. And I assume that some of these other, like, carpenter bees,
My hearing aids aren't that good.
I think
the birds are better. They can hear better than we can. And
yes,
so
absolutely.
I think that they're probably picking up on that.
Well, that's so fascinating. Richard, thanks for that one. Pam writes in, I have a Japanese elm in my yard. This spring, a sapsucker pecked at the tree nonstop, finally pinned up a bedsheet as high as I could reach to cover the thickest part of the tree. Will these holes affect the health of the tree? Will the bird come back in the spring? Can I protect the tree? That's all from Pam. This is a half garden show question.
Yeah.
And the answer is no problem.
Yeah.
The trees have evolved long over long periods of sapsucker attraction. And, you know, you could see old trees with old holes in them, and the trees are doing fine. Mm-hmm. They heal up rapidly. But if you're into woodwork, I know some woodworkers are not too pleased to find old sapsucker holes in the heart of the tree that they were planning to find good wood for working with. But that's a whole different story.
Well, while we're on the topic of sapsuckers and whatnot, let's go to Sheffield. And Jessica, you're on.
Yes, hi. I, it's funny you should bring up sapsuckers. I was listening to you saying that you have this thing that looks like a woodpecker and it's pecking away, and I was surprised that they didn't address that it could be a yellow-bellied sapsucker. Am I off my mark?
They're often not on houses.
No.
Because they're after the sap on live trees.
That answers that.
Yeah.
And the little guys I saw were not on the house. They were in bushes, and they were definitely not yellow-bellied. I mean, these guys.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, don't go by but too far, because the yellow-bellied sapsucker is not really all that yellow on the belly.
Why name it that?
Right. I know. It's like a red-bellied woodpecker.
It has a yellow wash when it's in breeding plumage.
Jessica, do you have a follow-up?
No, I was just curious why we wasn't addressed that could have been, but now I know why it could not have
thank
been.
Thank you so much for the call. Yeah. Have a good one. You know, another thing we saw, is this the time, and I keep going back to past shows, in autumn, is this the time when the rare hummingbirds are coming through?
Yes. Mm-hmm. This is the time to keep an eye for. Even, you know, some of these rare ones look almost identical to the female ruby-throated hummingbird. There are some minor, and talk about ultra-minor differences between some of these things. It's like whether it has a little notch on the third feather on the outside of the tail. Mm-hmm. So pictures.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we saw little teeny birds, and we weren't sure. I mean, they went into the tree, and we these were way smaller than even the small garden variety birds we have. We have no idea what they were.
It is kinglets are moving through right now. They're coming in migration, and they're smaller than a chickadee, but bigger than a hummingbird.
Okay, that might be it.
And
yeah.
They do this, often you can tell what they are just without even using binoculars, because they tend to like hover a little bit in front of like a branch or a leaf or something.
Very, very active.
And then, and they hop all over the place, and they make a little rattle sound as well.
What's the name of that?
Kinglets. We have two species, but the ruby crowns are coming through right now. So,
all right. So maybe that's what we saw.
Yeah. I think so. Because, and you know, they're conspicuous by their invisible nature. They just move so fast.
Yeah.
You see them, and then they blend in with the greenery. They're kind of a leaf green color, mainly all over.
Very mm-hmm. cool. Let's go to Schenectady. Yeah. Steve, you're on.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, and I want to give you props for the Herb Alpert nod earlier.
Oh, yeah, man.
Whipped cream is the best. Okay. I love it. I still remember that album cover. Yeah. Anyhow, so my question is, I've been dealing with all summer being awakened at the crack of dawn by what I've come to determine are Carolina wrens. Mm-hmm. I've been in the area since 1984, and I don't recall them being as prevalent as they are now, but they're really loud.
Sure are.
Is there anything
that's true
unusual about them being here?
They did not used to be here, and they're another one of these species that is moving northward with our milder mm-hmm. winters and more feeders available and whatnot. It's not so, it's more hospitable to them now than it ever used to be. So there are a lot more of them.
Mm.
They had a very interesting.
Are they considered?
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Somebody
I was going to ask if they're considered invasive.
No, not at all.
No.
No, they're a native species.
Okay.
But it interesting growth curve that they had in the early years of their arrival. It would be like the small waves coming in on the incoming tide. The wave would come in of the Carolina wrens. And then we'd have a few of them around, then a harsh winter. It would decimate the population. And then a couple of 5 years later, another wave will come in a little further north, and a few more will make it. And then it just a continuum like that. And it's sort of like a developing hardiness that they have evolved into. And so now they can withstand the baddest winters we've had offered so far.
Huh. Okay. Well, Steve, thanks a lot for that one. Let's go now to Susan in Schenectady. Susan, you're on.
Yes. Hi. Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Love your show.
Love AMC.
Thank you. Tremendous. Appreciate it.
I have also the Carolina Wrens. We have them almost all year round. I have to boast a little and say that we put out little watering dishes. And the Cardinals also are very faithful. They appreciate the water, as does the catbird. My question is about a hermit thrush that for about 10 days has been pretty regularly visiting our patio where I strew sunflower seed, and it also has a watering saucer.
Yeah.
I wonder whether that hermit thrush possibly nested in a wooded area nearby, or is it migrating? What's likely?
You're in Schenectady?
Yep.
Yep. Balltown and Union area.
Well, it's hard to tell.
Suburban?
They do nest in the Pine Barrens in the area, and they are migrating through, and a few of them will actually overwinter in our area. So it's sort of caught betwixt and between on them. All I can say is, you know, here's something you might consider doing is putting out some grape jelly in a small saucer and see if it picks up on that. And that will be more up
That'd
its alley.
Really? Hermits eat jelly?
They're fructivores. And, you know, berries are in their menu. And grape jelly works on so many wonderful things
out
there.
But it has to be grape jelly? What about apricot nectars? I mean, apricot, you know.
Keep it cheap and it works.
Really?
Yeah. Grape jelly is the cheapest. And it works just as well.
Susan, will your neighbors think you're a nut if you put jars of jelly outside?
My neighbors' concerns about me probably are pretty varied, so I'm a little eccentric.
Okay, fair enough.
You're in the right group here.
Good for you.
they make feeders just for jelly.
Oh, did you hear that, Susan?
Say it again, Julie.
Say it again.
We have lived here 51 years.
Wow.
And I know every bird that I have observed on the property. There's a sense of stewardship here.
I love that.
But so do I. Thank you. I soften in warm water old craisins that I have. And the catbirds and robins seem to appreciate that. I'm wondering about the thrush.
He will, too.
Maybe.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, Julie made a comment before you went into your last bit there. And, Julie, this is interesting.
I was just saying that there are feeders designed for jelly.
Wow.
So
Are they just bowls? What do they look like?
I have a jelly. Yeah, it's basically a bowl. And I put grape jelly out all summer, and we have the orioles and the catbirds, and some of the other birds are coming in and eating.
That's pretty exciting
jelly stuff.
Yeah. Susan, we got to let you go here, but thank you very much. We're just about out of time, so we'll call it on that. But we are doing this show again in 2 weeks because we got to get back on schedule. People love their birds, and so even though we missed it during the fun drive, we did this one, and then next month we'll be back first Tuesday of the month. Now, here's an interesting one, and I got to go. Somebody asked about black squirrels and said they're native to North America, whereas gray squirrels are an introduced species. Is that true?
Negative?
You ever see a black squirrel? I've seen black squirrels
it's
when I lived down.
A morph of a gray squirrel.
I don't know. We had a bunch of them down in Brewster when I lived down there 30-some odd years ago.
There's a strain of them that comes and goes. And there is some thought that in the pre-colonial days, that might have been the predominant phase of the squirrel.
So maybe he's not wrong.
No.
Well, we can't argue about this now. I have underwriting to read.
It's a bird show, right?
It's a good point. Support comes from Fadigan's Nursery, Latham, New York, featuring 3 year-round greenhouses with a variety of tropical houseplants, orchids, succulents, plus botanically inspired home decor and gifts. Fadigans.com. The Lake George Land Conservancy, Bolton Landing, New York, providing more than 40 miles of trails for nature therapy and exploration beyond the shore of Lake George. HikeLakeGeorge.org. And the Arkell Museum at Canajoharie, presenting Mingling the Waters, 200 Years on the Erie Canal, ArkellMuseum.org. All right, well, thanks again to Julie Hart and Rich Guthrie for being here. Now, they'll be back in 2 weeks, so you can call then. Merle, if you call our guests, don't yell at them, all right? That's all I'm asking. Thanks to our engineer, Mike Bowen. Beautiful job. Lightning Eddie Rosie screened the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, physical therapy with Matthew Goodemote. If you're feeling less than limber, maybe you're a little sore, we'll see you at 2:00.